Hello, and welcome to episode 38 of University Registrars, talking about stuff. In another international outing for the podcast, this episode is brought to you via Finland, from where I'm joined by the first chief financial officer I've spoken to, Mariana Bom of Aalto University. We begin by exploring Mariana's career journey, from her first post-graduation role working for an elevator company, before her move to Nokia, where her strength in Russian language saw her setting up operations in Moscow, before spending some time based in Colombia. Having become tired of the short-termism of the commercial world, she joined Aalto 12 years ago, just at its establishment, and is now the last person remaining from the original leadership team. Mariana describes how Aalto was successfully formed from three different universities and a private foundation at the same time as other structural changes taking place in Finnish higher education. The new university was consolidated very quickly onto a single campus, bringing immediate benefits from interactions between the disciplines for students and staff alike, and some impressive innovations and cultural changes. In terms of professional services, Mariana had been used to working in a matrix structure, and the establishment of business partners and schools has worked out well at the university, despite some initial suspicion from some faculty. Mariana also observes that Aalto is a very international establishment, with around 40% of faculty and a large proportion of students too from outside Finland. Interestingly, most internal meetings are conducted in English because of the range of international staff. We discuss the university's response to COVID, which Mariana feels they managed well, but are now finding new challenges as staff seek to adapt to hybrid working patterns and aim to rebuild the sense of a community on campus. Looking at the broader positioning of universities in Finnish society, Mariana suggests that one of the biggest challenges they face is in demonstrating their value to the nation and showing the value that they add and that higher education remains worthy of investment. We conclude a really interesting discussion by agreeing on our shared appreciation of Humane and similar European groupings, which offer great opportunities for senior university leaders to network and to learn from each other and always avoid reinventing the wheel. I do hope you enjoy it. Hello and welcome to the latest edition of University Registrars Talking About Stuff. And this time it's my enormous pleasure to introduce Mariana Bom from Aalto University in Finland. Now, Mariana is the first chief financial officer I think I've ever spoken to on the podcast. So welcome, Mariana. It's great to have you.
Thanks a lot. And it's great that you had me.
Good. You are, however, not the first colleague from Finland I've spoken to, because I have spoken to Esa Hämäläinen of Helsinki University earlier. But I'm really, really pleased to be able to speak to you today. So it's great to have you on. As a start off, Mariana, can you tell me a bit about your career journey? Because I think you started with an engineering company, then went to Nokia, and then went to Aalto. But it wasn't, I assume, quite as straightforward as that, because you were in South America for some time, weren't you?
Yeah, I guess I'm sort of, well, maybe not an oddball, but still sort of, I started actually my career as after doing my master's in the business side in a global business. I was first working for an elevator company, and then I joined Nokia. And since I actually learned Russian in my youth, so at that point in the 90s, the Russian plus business degree was a very hot topic. So in Nokia, one of my first jobs was to establish the subsidiary company of Nokia in Moscow and sort of run the CFO stuff there. And then fast forward, you know, they were the big corporate growth years for Nokia and a lot of traveling, 150 to 200 days a year traveling, but very, very, very interesting, nice times. I always ended up in kind of the new world type of countries, Yeah, we also spend as a family some time in South America, based in Bogota, Colombia. When I came back from there, I got a call from one of the headhunting companies saying that there would be a position in higher education. And at that point in time, I was already quite tired of the listed company world because, you know, you have your quarters, and it's a very short-term type of world where you live in. You have your spring organization and autumn organization, and there is always reorganizing happening. There's a lot of competition. And I had been thinking about joining some sort of non-profit type of job at that point in time, so it just came perfectly. And ever since, 12 years in Aalto, I'm actually the only original leadership team member of the university. So the board has changed, all the other leaders have changed. I'm the last one, so I'm not sure if that's a good or a bad thing. Perhaps they are hoping that I will sort of disappear soon, but I'm still there. I'm the last woman standing.
I know how that feels. But Aalto is a relatively new university, isn't it? So were you in at the beginning then?
Actually, I joined perhaps like a month before the new university baby was born. Aalto is actually kind of in many ways a very strange new creature because it started out as a private foundation and by legal form, a private foundation. And then at the beginning of 2010, three long-term good universities actually sort of merged into the private foundation. And these three universities used to be government offices in the same way that Esa explained in the previous podcast about the fact that universities used to be part of the governmental sector. I had the empty foundation, then three universities coming in and trying to figure out the merger of three. And that was quite a ride, I have to say.
But it must have, I mean, one of the reasons you left the private sector, though, was to get away from that spring reorganization. And there you were, straight back into it.
Yeah, exactly. But it was actually kind of historic because, you know, the three universities that came together, there was the University of Technology, the biggest University of Technology in Finland, then Arts and Design University and a business school, and all those three universities came together. And actually, this was like a big idea of the previous presidents of those three institutions to come together. And actually the Finnish kind of corporate and industry sector got very excited about it because, you know, for good business, you would need technology, you would need business, and you would need design and creativity. So we had a lot of support in the beginning, and also a lot of financial support. And I have to say that there is also a learning from the kind of the university leadership viewpoint, because even if we say that universities are like, it's like running a graveyard and you change it one body at a time, but it was such a big major kind of point of change that, and because we couldn't take any of the three preceding universities' processes or things as a given. So we had a moment in time when we had kind of a tabula rasa to plan a little bit in a new way for a few years' time. And we utilized that opportunity.
But I mean, it, it, from the outside, it looks to have been astonishingly successful in a very short period of time, because, you know, Aalto is now regarded as, you know, a leading player globally in many respects. And, you know, and I imagine there's a lot of things beneath the surface that are still awkward and difficult. And there's a lot of legacy issues. And certainly, you know, wherever in, you know, mergers I've witnessed or experienced in the UK, these things take, you know, generations to work through. So it does look to have worked extremely well as a merger.
Yeah, I have to say, having been sort of witnessing it from the beginning, it's never easy. But I think one of the key things was that when we started, we had three campuses, one for each university. And I think that one of the great enablers of the culture change was to sort of actually, in a very short period of time, if you think about universities, we were able to transfer all the activities on one campus. And we are at least claiming that this type of campus where you have these three fields together, that type of campus doesn't exist anywhere else. Right. And also our bachelor students, they start in one bachelor center. So they, the young people from technology, business and arts and design, they sort of meet and so on. And of course these, so I think that was a great success to actually bring all of us to the same campus, because, you know, there's no way of changing the culture if people don't physically meet, and actually sort of you just take out all the kind of prejudice of arts people looking kind of suspiciously about the money greedy business students, or greedy business students looking at these weird art students and so on.
I mean, in terms of how it has played out then, I mean, are there you know, is there a kind of general sense of people coming together for a common good, or are there still, you know, amongst the, you know, the academic staff in particular, you know, hard divisions between those disciplines, or has it actually changed the culture of these different organizations, do you think?
I think it has changed, because when we started, we had like because we had quite a big additional funding from the government, which didn't last long, of course, you know, was taken out very quickly. But we were able to sort of the community, together with the community, we had certain kind of transdisciplinary new kind of initiatives that we funded. For example, we have a Design Factory, which has actually now like a network around the globe where the business net technology and the arts and design student meet around a real world product design or process design problem, and the companies or organizations take part in this as well. And that meant that we had the faculty and the students to join together around a real world issue to try to solve it. We had also several other these type of kind of transdisciplinary or multidisciplinary, whatever, you know, people always discuss what's the right word, but these type of things happening, and it has brought them much better together. But of course, also we still have also the disciplines, and there are always silos in the organization. You cannot avoid them. So yeah, there are silos, but I think they are much lower than what we had before.
Yeah, and in terms of professional services as well, did you design that model from with a blank page, how did you bring them together?
Yeah.
Yeah, because it would have been three CFOs, right?
Yeah. No, of course, we had to bring them together sort of redesign everything. And one of the things that, you know, there was a huge discussion that, you know, there are these, and there was even the newspapers were writing that these failed corporate leaders were recruited to the university to ruin everything that we have done so far. Because one of the things was that I had an idea, because I had been working in a matrix kind of steered organization. So as an example, our finance services and HR services were arranged in a way that we would have so-called kind of HR and finance partners who are like the key support persons for the deans in the business, in the schools, or you might call them faculties. And then they have like a matrix line or dotted line toward the function head who is taking care of the competence development and things like that. And that was, there was a big kind of suspicion in the beginning that this is somehow the central administration's plot to somehow, put into the departments and to the schools their own representatives. But actually nowadays it works beautifully, you know, like many of our key professional service staff, they typically, like I would have this annual discussion with the head of finance of the School of Science and the dean of the School of Science and myself and the head of the finance of that unit, we together agree what are the priorities and how we work together. So I think that it works when there is trust and I think it's also it sort of, I think that these things are never black and white, so we sort of try to combine both and world that yes, it's really important that the deans sort of own their own professional services, but on the other hand, it's really important that we have very, very professional people in and that we also need, you know, if we introduce digital processes, we just have to kind of try to unify or harmonize to some extent. And then we have to sort of balance all the time between the need for the efficiency versus then the needs of the independent, academically independent units.
It's a story as old as time in universities. Yeah. It's good, good to see.
Is it the university or is it a collection of independent kingdoms? And I think, you know, in this way, we can say that, yes, it's both. And we want to keep both. Both are valuable. Because I don't think that one university without the independent thinking kingdoms would be good either. It wouldn't be a university.
No, I agree
about it. Yes.
Yeah, and there is something fundamental about the autonomy of academic units, particularly on academic matters, is actually the thing that makes them great. But there's elements of the administrative side that you have to get the balance right in order to deliver both efficiency and effectiveness in support of the academic enterprise. Because, you know, what you don't want to do is divert massive resources away from research and education in order to run the administration. But nor do you want everyone involved in research and education to have to spend their whole time doing administration. Right.
Yeah.
So, you know, there's a lot of swings and roundabouts and balances to be struck there, I think.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, so, you know, One thing that you learn very quickly when you come to the university environment is that things are never kind of black or white. They always are somewhere in the middle. And you typically find a good enough sort of balance between those.
Yeah, and they're always contested as well, and people will argue about them all the time. But you can make your way through it. Looking again at the whole university, I mean, it is still relatively young, but very successful. Do you recruit a lot of international students? Do you teach courses in English? How, you know, what's the mix of the student body and activity?
Yeah, if we talk about internationalization, so first thing I wanted to mention is that actually, because of the introduction of a new more international tenure track system in Finland that didn't exist before, we have been able to recruit quite great number of actually international faculty. And currently more than 40% of our faculty is non-Finnish. So
wow.
it's a very big thing. For the student side, I don't remember the numbers now, but we have a fairly sizable student body as well outside of Finland, of course, you know, just one clarification is that we don't have tuition fees for the EU students, but non-EU students pay student the tuition fees, so we have been actually very, very rapidly internationalizing, I have to say that almost all of our internal meetings nowadays we are just totally English speaking meetings and so on.
Wow.
Because of this, and then we have also recruited quite a lot of professional service people also outside of Finland or who don't speak Finnish.
Are they required to learn Finnish or on signing up for the university?
Well, they are if they want to stay in Finland for a long time, obviously. But
and
of course, then, you know, our main kind of funding body, which is the Ministry of Education and Culture, of course, everything that relates to the public sector side requires Finnish language skills. But I like the mix that we have done so far.
Sounds really impressive, really impressive. I mean, we talked about meetings there, and of course, you know, meetings are the lifeblood of university life, aren't they?
Yes.
First of all, let me ask you, I mean, what was the experience of the university during COVID? I mean, I assume you navigated your way successfully through it, but how have you come out, you know, what is kind of the other side, or at least we hope it's the other side, and we hope the worst is behind us. So has the university adapted to different ways of working and indeed different ways of meeting?
I think that, like I have discussed with many of our partner universities and so on, I think we did also extremely well and surprisingly kind of fast adapted to the kind of the remote work that was sort of compulsory at that stage. Now I think that coming back, we are sort of in the growing pains a little bit because, first of all, I think that both the personnel and the student well-being seem to be having a lot of problems with that, and of course we cannot go back to normal. There's a new normal and the hybrid world that we need to somehow find the best recipe how to live in that world. And I think that none of the organizations have struck a right balance yet in that respect. So we are just sort of learning, we have just started our kind of new hybrid way of working, environment whereby people there are different ways, but we agreed that 2 days a week on campus is a minimum, and we want people, because we are a community, we are not just a collection of people, we are actually a community, so we want people to come back to the campus. And it's difficult because some people don't really want to come back to the campus. So it's a difficult transition. It was very fast transition one way, but now, you know, we have the growing pains again to try to make another step.
Yeah, and I think, you know, we've experienced very similar things. There are some people, of course, who've been on campus throughout because had to keep things running. But there are others who, yes, couldn't wait to get back to campus as soon as they're allowed, and others who don't ever want to come back. It's very difficult trying to devise guidance and rules for people when you've got those two extremes, isn't it? It makes it really, really challenging. Because we want to rebuild that community. You're absolutely right. And we need to, because universities are fundamentally communities of people, aren't they? And learners and scholars and researchers. So we've got to do that. That coming together is fundamental. But, you know, we've also got to be sensitive to people's needs. And we want to ensure that we enable people to do their best work for the university without, you know, forcing them unnecessarily to do. So it's really difficult, isn't it? It is really difficult.
It's really difficult because if you strike a balance somewhere in between, sort of no one is absolutely happy. So there is no optimal solution for this particular problem. But, you know, having the hat on, the CFO hat on, it's also really interesting the way that the campus will look like, because just a couple of weeks ago, having walked around the campus, you see these magnificent, nice buildings and spaces, sort of fairly empty, I would have to say, at this moment, and how do you deal with that? It's a really, really interesting question. But I think that what I'm sort of thinking about, that this is actually an opportunity for us to bring in more of our kind of key like ecosystem partners to the campus and so on. But yeah, it's we are in a human experiment now. How do we handle this?
Absolutely. So looking at the bigger picture in higher education in Finland, then what would you say are there any distinctive issues that the country is grappling with? I mean, we've got challenges in the UK in particular with our government looking to blame universities for most social problems that exist, and also suggest that we're fundamentally stifling free speech, whereas we've always seen ourselves and still see ourselves as absolutely the champions and indeed the home of free speech in modern society. So we've got lots of cultural issues. Are there similar things in Finland, or is everything rosy in the garden?
I guess that's of course always the. I think that sometimes when I came, I was sort of looking for the universities being very good in terms of managing their own public relations, but this doesn't seem to be the case. I don't know. I think it's not just in Finland, but in overall, I feel like it's also like a very long-term question that's been around for a long time is how do we demonstrate our value added? This old saying, university, it's an investment, not a cost, and things like that. It's a very tricky thing. And then in our case, I think that it's also, there has been a lot of kind of a little bit changing politics. We were during the perhaps the first 10 years of Aalto, we were in the era of profiling the universities and trying to sort of make the university network a bit more efficient and things like that. And now we are in the moment where universities are part of the regional politics sort of there is a lot of politicians who want to place and give small universities across the country degree giving or educational responsibilities, and this of course is eroding the overall resource base. So that's an issue, of course. And then we have the sort of funny thing, because at this moment we are, the target is that we have to have more than 50% of the young people have a university degree, but that kind of combined with the population decline actually because of the birth rates. So there is now a little bit of quite a high growth, which will be then sort of leveling off later on. And how do we handle this transition? So many things ongoing, but I would say that perhaps the most kind of a big thing is to how to continue to demonstrate that yes, we are worthy of the investment.
Well, I think that's common here as well. But that is encouraging, to hear nevertheless a relatively positive environment. Because of course universities did, as part of that COVID response, an awful lot of the research that helped with the response to COVID emerged from universities as well. Although, the thanks again from our politicians have been few. One final comment I was interested in your views on, Mariana, was, I mean, you and I originally met through Humane, the heads of university management in Europe, and obviously since Brexit, you know, Great Britain has sought to distance itself further, which has made our universities much more enthusiastic for grabbing hold of anything we can. Yes. In Europe to try and stay a part of it. I remain hugely committed to Humane and think that it's a really important organisation for universities in the UK to stay involved with, along with other European associations. What's your perspective on those kind of European networks then, and their, what do they mean to you and to colleagues in Finland, do you think?
Yeah. Thanks for the question, first of all, because I think that Humane is actually a great family of colleagues. When I went through the Humane Winter School back in, 12 years ago, ever since that, I've been kind of quite actively involved. And I think it's so important for us to actually network, just not within our own national network, but actually to learn from the other universities. And we have a great, I think one of the values of the university sector is that, because we don't compete, we compete in the academic stuff, but we don't otherwise compete. So we are free to sort of copy with pride all the best ideas that all of our other colleagues have had, rather than kind of reinventing the wheel ourselves. I'm a big advocate of Humane and the Humane network. I think it's great, and also inviting all the new university kind of professional leaders to join and learn from each other. I think that I wouldn't have had such a kind of a good progression of things in Aalto if I hadn't had the support of the wiser colleagues from other countries.
Oh, well, that's fantastic to hear. And I completely agree with you about the benefits of those kind of organizations and Humane in particular. And, I similarly view the things that I learned from colleagues internationally as being incredibly valuable to operations in my institution. Mariana, we need to stop there, but okay. I do want to say thank you for a delightful conversation. It's been really great talking to you.
That's all then from this episode of University Registrars Talking About Stuff. There will be another one along before you know it. And in the meantime, if you can't get enough of this kind of thing, there is an extensive back catalogue of previous conversations with University Registrars talking about lots of different stuff. Until the next time then.